G'day everyone and welcome to the Talking Dice Podcast. Whether you're a dice maker, collector or just a tabletop RPG lover, we've got you covered. I'm Aaron, the host of the show and author of the Crit Maker Guide to Dicecraft, now available on Amazon. Running a podcast in 2024 is expensive, with hardware, hosting, production and advertising. It costs us a large sum of money each month. If you like this podcast, please consider a one-time donation via Ko-fi, or if you love it, please consider supporting us on Patreon. For details, please check out our website, talkingdice.co. In today's episode, we're chatting to Brandon and Jesse from the Ravens Ridge Emporium, fellow Aussies, dice makers, purveyors of Insect Oblivion, and the brains behind the wildly successful Kickstarter Cartograph, a solo map-making RPG. All right, let's chat about some role-playing. Now, I believe you're both kind of connoisseurs of role-playing games that aren't Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, I think so. Got a couple things we're playing at the moment. We're playing Mothership at the moment with my online group. It's a great OSR sort of sci-fi horror role-playing game. It's really, really good. And the GM we've got at the moment is the other Raven. He lives in Tassie, the third Raven of Ravens Ridge. And he's an excellent GM. He just like knows how to set a scene and his character voices are fantastic. And, you know, and he does so much. Like, we use Foundry as our BTT. Nick does a fantastic job with the VTT. He sets so much stuff up, so many like macros. It's so immersive. It's like, as an example, when I was playing last night, I think we had our most recent, I had interfaced with an AI that was controlling the ship. And then as I did so, a little console popped up in the VTT and I could actually chat with dialogue with the AI in this little console screen that popped up, and it would talk back to me. And stuff. And yeah. I was like, how do you do this, Nick? This is incredible.
That's nuts. Yeah. I mean, that just takes it to a whole other level, doesn't it? The
interactivity. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you do any of your own role-playing games?
Yeah. Yeah.
As a group or?
Yeah, we do. So there's one we're working on at the moment, and I don't really know when it's going to be ready, but we want to make sure we do a lot of playtesting for it, because we tend to, a lot of our games have been solo or GM-less games that we've made, but this is going to be our foray into more traditional group play where you have a game master and players. It's called Alpha Directive, and it's also a sci-fi one. I mean, we've been playing that a bit lately too, just to sort of tease out some of the rules and test different scenarios and stuff like that. So it's kind of been, it hasn't been like a big sprawling campaign. It's sort of just been like a little bit disjointed scenes and things like that in the game to really test out the mechanics. But we've been like playing that a bit as well.
Yeah, cool. Has sci-fi always been the thing you're most interested in, or?
No, actually, I don't think so. It just happens that right now, this point in time, sci-fi would seem like my most favorite genre.
Because looking at the cosplay and all of that that you guys do for your conventions and stuff, it looks pretty hardcore fantasy.
I think our mainstay is like Victorian Gothic sort of stuff, whether it's horror or just plain old fantasy adventure. Like, that's the sort of way we like to play in. And Ravens Ridge is the name of a city that we sort of homebrewed before the business existed. And so we've had a long running campaign in that for the past like 5 years or something that we still play as well.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. And that's Victorian Gothic, you know, vampires, werewolves, all that fun stuff.
And Victorian Gothic sci-fi is the next iteration. That would almost be like a bit of a Warhammer vibe, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
like,
surely it would.
You know, you've got the tall cathedrals and the robotic vampire killing machines and all of that.
Yeah, that could be cool, actually.
There you go. All right, that's the next one.
That's the next one. We heard it here first.
That sounds good. I feel like we have enough ideas. Stop feeding us more ideas.
I know what that's like. I think once you kind of get into that entrepreneurial mindset, you know, it's like, oh, what do we do next?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What's the next thing? What's the next adventure?
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned there's another Raven in the mix. How many Ravens are there exactly?
There's three in total, three of us. So it's Jesse, me, and Nick. He's like a newer addition. We've been friends since I was like six.
We've
always made games and stuff together, but now we're sort of making it a bit more formal because he's released his own games under his own name and stuff too. But we're going to sort of start bringing things in and relaunching some of his games with some more rule tweaks and all that kind of stuff. And he's just a brilliant designer and stuff too. So we're pretty, you know, he's only joined the last couple of months, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. Very recently. And so we just sort of got to the point where we realized we need another set of hands to just help us managing. I mean, as you know, it's a lot of work running your own business, right?
It is
no small feat. You're never not working, right?
And you've just got to know everything. You've got to know the marketing and the product design and development and web design, graphic design. It's just exhausting sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah. One person usually runs the show, but it's kind of the goal that we've had for our business is that we'd love to bring more like family and friends on board. And often like go to my friend, I'll be like, do you have anything that we could put into Raven's Ridge? Like, I want to help everyone succeed around me. So it's only natural that we start adopting our friends.
That's so awesome. I just wish I had more friends that make awesome nerdy stuff. I would like to.
Yeah.
I've got a friend who's making whips for burlesque shows.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty cool. So yeah, I can't figure out how to tie that into my business, but maybe at some point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nerdy whips. Let's go.
Nerdy whips.
Now, the Raven's Ridge Emporium, how long have you guys been running for now?
We started late 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah, just before COVID. It all started because we started off as dice makers and we were getting into D&D. Oh, well, you'd been in it for ages. I'd played in a campaign for 2 years before 2018, but Brandon had been playing it since he was like a kid. And one day, I think I was just like scrolling or something, and I was like, dice are cool. And Brandon just turned to me, he's like, why don't you make them? I was like, yeah, maybe one day. And then that year, like maybe a week later, he had bought me a kit on like how to make dice. I'm like, whoa, let's go, I guess we're doing this.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And been obsessed ever since. It's been a long time now, actually. I'm really proud we've kept Raven's Ridge going this long and we've put much effort into it. It's been a lovely journey.
And you managed to keep it going through all of the COVID time as well. So, you know, was that good for your business like it was for a lot of other nerdy makers out there?
Yeah, I think it was pretty good for us too. I don't think like back in those days, it was sort of, we didn't really have a proper business model or anything like that. And we didn't even have a proper website. We were just selling off of Etsy. But I remember back in those days, we were pretty small time on Instagram. But whenever we would say, oh, we're doing a shop update, you know, it would be kind of common for us to sell all the die sets that we made. And now that we're like bigger and all that kind of stuff, we'll do a shop update and sell like a couple of sets of dice or something like that if we're lucky. So like, it was definitely, you know, a lot better during COVID. And, you know, people had more money too, because it wasn't, the economic situation wasn't as bad as it is now.
Well,
Well, also too, they weren't going out and spending money. So that probably also helped.
Yeah, absolutely. That definitely helps.
Yeah. And so your dice making journey, that was predominantly you, Jesse?
So we both worked on it. I was more of like the making dice, sanding, polishing, and Brandon would help out there. And Brandon's more of the like game dev, website management, emails.
I did all the boring stuff. Well, you got to do the fun stuff.
We're very grateful because paperwork is the bane of my existence.
Yeah, it sounds like a dream team though, like playing off each other's strengths there.
Yeah, we do work well together, I think, definitely.
Yeah, it's been good.
I think that's why it survived so long.
Mm.
You know?
And even recently, I've seen some incredible Instagram posts with some of your dice. So it feels like it's definitely still something that you're, you know, quite passionate about.
Yeah, I feel like we're evolving away from dice making a little bit because it was like the first thing we ever did. And now that there's like many more dice makers and more factories making dice, there's people kind of opting for the cheapest option. And we noticed that we're like selling less and less dice. So we're like, okay, how can we still make Raven's Ridge viable without it kind of crashing to the ground because we're not making dice sales? So we kind of expanded and started doing other accessories, game dev. And with so many projects on, especially the Kickstarter, we're kind of like, dice making is still this beautiful thing we can do, but we can't, like, we can no longer crank out like 10 sets a month. It's kind of like one set a week. And we're like, oh, that was good. Look at this. All right. Anyway.
And what about commissions? Do you still get asked to do a lot of commissions? Do you still want to do commissions? Do you like doing commissions?
Oh, okay. Commissions. Oh, my goodness. So I actually have a love-hate relationship with commissions where I mainly love them. Because I think it's so wonderful to hear other people's ideas. Like, some of the best die sets I've ever made was someone came to me with a commission and they were like, hey, I want to make this. And I'm like, you're a genius. You're hired. When do you want to start? And I make their set and I'm like, this is a work of art. And you thought of this. Like, that's so beautiful. And I think the hate side comes from, like, when I make a set and I'm not happy with it and I'm like, damn it. And then I make a set and I'm not happy with it. I'm like, damn it. And I do that four more times and I have all of the same four set that I'm like, these all suck.
It's so challenging. I think it's probably the same. Well, it is the same with any art. You know, I've done my fair share of graphic design over the years as well. And I don't know. I mean, sometimes though, we are our own worst critic, aren't we? You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes gone, I hate this. I cannot stand it. I have to show them something. I show a client and they're like, I love it. It's amazing. Yeah. You're like, I don't want to say why. I think sometimes when we get into that kind of, you know, creative frustration, it's sometimes more us than the people on the other end.
Yeah, we do sort of get a fair few commissions, a lot more than we do of just like organic die sales, I think. And then we've been having a lot of wedding commissions lately, actually, which has been a lot of fun. Right.
Tell me about the wedding commissions.
It was a woman and her, was it a bridal party or was it like the groomsmen and the bridesmaids or something, right?
Which one are you talking about?
The most recent one you did.
Oh, yeah. So the bride is commissioning 5 sets that are all the same and they're like stars and clouds and kind of got like a royal? Yeah, blue through them. And it's such a beautiful idea. And I showed her the prototype and she was like, I love these. And I'm like, what are you going to be doing with them? She was like, they're for the groomsmen. And I was like, oh, they must be into D&D. And her idea was actually to make what are they called? They're like a brooch.
A brooch.
You pin. So the groomsmen are going to have like the flower and then these dice just attached to their suits. Such a cool idea.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Love it.
Yeah.
Nerdy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I've heard a couple of other dice makers talking about, you know, like doing wedding dice and stuff like that. It seems to be
all
a thing
the
right
are
now.
Getting married, so they're gonna make their wedding suit.
I kind of wish when I got married about a million years ago that it was it was a thing back then. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, usually it's dried flowers in the dice set,
like a bouquet.
Yeah, like the bouquet.
Yeah,
that's a cool idea.
I guess I mean there's so many other things you could put into it. You could put like fragments of wedding dress,
lace.
There's all kinds of things you could do. I mean. And I guess like a lot of people want like memorial things as well, which is not something I understand, but power to anyone who does.
I've seen some interesting dice sets in that vein. So like their pet's ashes or the pet's hair or like milk from when they were breastfeeding. Like,
trying to add
that
just
one
anything.
Was a wild.
There was blood one time and we're like, that reacts badly with resin.
No, it's interesting. I think people have some great ideas and there are some great dice makers out there, you know, like yourselves who go, I can run with that. Like, we can
try it out.
We can try that. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Now, you said dice aren't the primary focus at the moment. So what's Raven's Ridge focused on this second? You know, just looking at some of your Instagram photos, it kind of looks like you sell a bit of everything at your convention stalls.
Yeah, you follow the journey of my hyperfixations. There's dice. We got into making like decorative potions, which look really cool on the bookshelf. And what else do we sell? Like,
you got into entomology.
Yeah. So, but one day I just woke up and I was like, bugs are cool, and then started going ham on just doing silly little things with bugs.
Yeah, little domes and like the frames that you often see in like tattoo parlors, you know, with the
insects spread out. Yeah,
you
do a lot of those.
Cool. Oh God. Wow. Okay. But I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah, it's really cool to see a spider up close and know it's not gonna maul you alive.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I'm not a fan of arachnids. Right?
Yeah.
That is fair.
Not many people are. We usually get people come up to our table at conventions and they're like, "Oh, pretty butterflies," and then they see the spider and like sprint in the other direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just checking out your Instagram. I had no idea, though. Bugs are so cool. It's like the big beetles in the band and like that was amazing.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of...
You have a lot of fun with that, don't you? Yeah. All the domes. It's so, so hilarious.
Yeah, I was doing like normal bugs where you put a pretty little scorpion surrounded by flowers and one day I woke up, I'm like, what if they're like sacrificing each other? And then it's just been a downward spiral. I'm making one right now where it's like a water-based dome, and then I've just glued a bunch of little rubber duckies together, and then I'm gonna have like one bug kind of sitting on top of the ducks in like this, what are they called, a tube
Yeah, the inflatable tube.
Tube that also has ducks on it. And like, yeah, see?
That's what I would want to buy.
I kind of want to ask what inspires you, but I'm not sure I want to know.
Chaos. Black magic.
I'm surprised you didn't talk about the other new one you're doing, which the one where you bought a bunch of those tiny, like, human figurines for dollhouses.
She's going to
pile them all in a pile, yeah. Cover them in blood, and have an insect on top, victorious.
But where does this stuff come to you?
My prediction for the end of the world.
The insect overlords are coming.
Oh, no.
But where does this stuff come to you? Dreams?
Nightmares?
It's beamed into my head at nighttime.
Purely from your warlock patron? Like.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like
the Raven Queen.
The Raven Queen.
If I stare at something long enough, I'm like, what if this? And then that's how I get my idea.
Just watch too many horror movies or something. And
no, I'm a little baby. It's funny because I talk about making like horror things, like things covered in blood and sacrifice, but I can't sit down and watch a horror movie. I'll cry myself to sleep for like 3 months.
Yeah, I'm not good at horror movies. I like the kind of horror thriller type, you know?
Yeah,
suspenseful, yep. But yeah, I don't know. I can't do the gore things, but
yeah, jump scares suck too. Who enjoys jump scares?
Well, apparently a lot of people. Now, this wouldn't be a discussion of the Raven's Ridge Emporium unless we chatted about your wildly successful Kickstarter, Cartograph. So, do you want to tell us a little bit about that and your plans for the future?
Yes, yeah, that was our first big one. Yeah, we did like a tiny little tester one a year before Cartograph, but that was only like I think the funding goal for that was like $200 and ended up making like $1,000 or something. So I was pretty happy at the time, but it was more like I need to figure out how the hell Kickstarter even works. So that was that. But yeah, Cartograph was our first big one. And that was where we actually like, you know, we put some money into advertising for it. And, you know, we got a lot of help, you know, designing the Kickstarter page and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, and it went really, really well. It was really, really, shocking, actually. I don't think we thought it was going to go as well as it did. I mean, it's just been surreal. It's been sick.
Yeah, it looks absolutely fantastic. The campaign page. Yeah, I loved it. I love the video. I love, you know, and the constant contact with people, I think, is super important. Like, backers love that. They love to hear that you're still very much involved in it and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But tell us a little bit about Cartograph.
Yeah, sure. So Cartograph was born out of, it was like one of my first games, and it came from me sitting down to sort of design a homebrew world that I wanted to run a fantasy game in. And I was sitting down to make the world map, and I was like, okay, yeah, this is going to be awesome. And I sat down and I was like, oh man, I got nothing. And I sat there for ages trying to think of, you know, like I tried those techniques where you like throw rice or grains along the page and trace it to do the coastline, that kind of stuff. Yep. And I was like, this actually sucks. I'm having a terrible time. So I was like, you know what? I would have a lot more fun if this was a game. And so that's kind of the whole premise of Cartograph. Like the idea is the character you're playing is a cartographer that's gone to this new land and you need to map it out. And so as you play, you're actually drawing this world map, you know, within the parameters of the game. And by the end of it, you'll have a fully fleshed out world map that you can use in a homebrew setting with all of the locations like fleshed out to a degree that you could just drop it in and run a game in it. So that's sort of like the whole premise of Cartograph. And it involves a lot of rolling dice because we are dice goblins, of course.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It wouldn't be a game without it. So yeah, so that's sort of Cartograph. And I released an early version that I just sort of threw up on Itch and that had like positive response. And I sort of, it was sitting there for like a year and I thought, oh, I kind of want to just complete it. And like, to, you know, tie up all these loose ends and sort of fully flesh out the entire game. And that's where the Atlas edition was born. So that's why it's Cartograph Atlas edition. It's kind of like a second edition, I guess. And we'd done like a few test prints on like print on demand services and other kind of stuff too, because I wasn't really sure how to produce something like that. And it just like print on demand is all right, but you're never going to get that great quality, I don't think, as well. So we ended up going like to an overseas printer, and that was just like a whole new thing too, because we'd never ever worked with like an actual factory before, and that was it was really cool. We learned so much and we made a lot of mistakes, but we learned from them all too. So
but that's the good thing too, and I think, you know, like something I've seen with Kickstarter is, you know, people have, you know, they have a test run, it works, it's good, they have a good one, then they have a little bit of rapport, hopefully they have a good rapport, and then the next one, you know, it should be easier.
Yeah.
I mean, just as much work, obviously, but.
Yeah. Hopefully less hiccups, though. That's, yeah. We definitely found quite a few hiccups with this.
It's the problem with it, isn't it? Like, it, you kind of, you know, you're suddenly, you know, you're putting yourself in front of a whole lot of people, and you know, there's a whole lot of expectations, and you've got you know, distribution, delivery, you know, logistics. Like, there's so many issues apart from manufacture and you know, shipping containers getting lost in the process, and you know,
yeah, all sorts, absolutely. We ended up doing the distribution ourselves for this,
right? Okay.
Which at the time we were like, you know, oh, this will be a cool little toe in the water Kickstarter. So we didn't expect to, you know, need to do more than maybe 200 orders, and we got like 600. So it was like triple what we thought we were going to do. And so then we were just there, like, okay, I guess we don't have a lounge room anymore, because we have, you know, bubble mailers stacked to the ceiling and just like crates and crates of books everywhere and like shipping labels everywhere. Like, okay, have we done, you know, it was chaotic. But yeah, we made a few mistakes, but like, thankfully most people have just been like very receptive to just sort of us admitting we've done mistakes and trying to, you know, remedy them as quickly as we can. And yeah, everyone's been really, really lovely in the Kickstarter, and everyone's been so supportive and stuff too, have been understanding that it's our first go at something this scale, which is really nice. And you know, it's been a good experience overall.
Yeah, and it's exciting to do the next one, because we've already planned like our next six Kickstarters.
Nice.
Then, because the next one, I'm like, we're not going to make any of these mistakes again. It's going to be bigger and better, and we're just going to keep learning and growing.
Bigger and better mistakes.
Yeah.
Yep.
But what, I don't know, can you tell us anything about the next game?
Few.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Next for you.
Yeah.
So hey, go for
what's
it.
Up, pipeline? We've got this card game, this one that Jesse's designed. It's called Monster Match.
Yes.
It's just like a light little family game where you're sort of pairing up these little cute critters together based on their color, sort of making these friendships. So that's going to be the next one. That's where we're going to be sort of showcasing that at PAX. And then I think next year, the other Raven, he's got a solo role-playing game that he's been developing for the last couple of years. And it's a phenomenal game. It's called Caught in the Rain.
Mm.
And it's like a noir detective sort of solo role-playing game. And it uses this really fantastic mechanic with a deck of cards. And so you have this mystery that you're trying to solve. It utilizes three cards from the face cards that have taken out. And those represent what the actual answer is to the mystery. And throughout the game, you sort of reveal the other cards that are left, sort of doing a process of elimination to try and piece these things together. And then you tie it all into the narrative. And yeah, so we're going to do that probably March, I think, next year, something around there, maybe sort of in time for Zine Quest, that Kickstarter run. And yeah, then I think after that might be Alpha Directive, that sci-fi game that we've been playing on and off. And maybe we're going to try and do two a year, maybe one for ZineQuest, one for PAX. Gives us a nice bit of breathing room between each one.
Yeah. Wow. You've got a bit of a taste for it now then.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, absolutely.
You should see us. It's like 2 a.m. Brandon will shake me awake and be like, all right, game idea, and I'll immediately have pen and paper, like, bring it all, baby.
Now, you've done a lot of conventions in Australia at this point. What's been your favorite so far?
Yeah, I think that's easy. It's Tabletop Con, right?
Oh, yeah, we love a good Tabletop
Con. Yeah.
Yeah. Where's that one in?
Tabletop Con is held in Gold Coast.
Right, yeah.
And it's like, it's more focused on game design, so it's like got a lot of board game designers there. It's got a lot of card game, tabletop role-playing game designers and stuff, but it also has like, you know, dice makers and all sorts of cool, you know, makers showing off their wares. But it's like quite small, like it's, you know, a quarter of the size of like a small Supernova sort of thing. So you know, we definitely don't make as much sales, but it's so much more fun, and like the energy is so much more, there's like so much more of a community energy there, and there's all sorts of games going on at the same time. Like upstairs they have role-playing games and war games happening, and there's like heaps of little events that happen, and we really like the guys that run it too. They're brilliant.
They're great.
And so have you done cons, you know, across most of Australia at the moment, or do you primarily stick to the East Coast?
Pretty much the East Coast, yeah.
No.
So we sort of stay up Queensland. We went down to Sydney this year, but we didn't do it last year. And we're going down to Melbourne this year too. So we're going down to PAX, and that's about as far as I think we'll probably go. It's just one of those cases where like, if we were just selling dice and we had enough stock that we think it'd be worth it, we'd totally like fly to, you know, Perth or Adelaide or whatever. But it's just, you know, we got to drive everywhere because we've got, you know, bottles, potion bottles we can't really take, and like, you know, crates of books that we want to try and sell. So it's just a bit unfeasible. But maybe like, you know, one day if we can assume it's going to be lucrative enough to sort of pay for the journey, you know, it'd be cool to like do a big road trip down to Adelaide or, you know, maybe Perth. That might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Our Perth listeners are like, come on, please. Please. I've definitely been looking at the convention roster for the next 12 months going, where do I spend the money I don't have? And yeah, I think anytime I've spoken to anyone from the US, they're a bit shocked at how expensive conventions are in Australia.
It's ridiculous.
It's just not uncommon for a convention to be like, you know, $2,500 for a small booth. You know, then on top of that, you've got travel and fuel.
Yeah.
You know, probably accommodation if it's a multi-day event. And, you know, we're a business. It's not just enough to recoup that. Yeah. You've actually got to turn a profit, right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, can just be a real challenge sometimes.
Absolutely.
And I think the other thing too is we don't have a lot of, you know, small nerdy maker markets or Ren fairs or anything like that, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've really got to hone in on which events you want to commit to and, you know, how far you want to travel and all of that sort of stuff. So it's a bit of a challenge.
No. Yeah. You know, I think we're more spread out too, right? In Australia, there's so much distance between everyone.
But speaking of big conventions, tell me about PAX. That sounds really exciting.
Oh, yeah. We're really excited for PAX. Like, this will be your first time even attending as a customer. Like, you've never seen PAX before, hey?
Yeah, no, I have no context of what PAX even is.
Oh, it's so cool.
But Brandon went last year and was sending me videos like, this is a magical wonderland.
Yeah. So we're really excited. We ended up getting a booth. There is a couple of friends of ours that run a company called 1000 Rats, and they're game designers. They've made this really cool little card game, and they ended up going to Essen in Germany, the huge board game convention. And so they had a table at PAX, and Essen's the same time as PAX Australia. So they were like, okay, we had this table, but we're going to a bigger and better convention, basically. So do you want our spot? And we were like, hell yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Absolutely jumping on that. So we grabbed their spot and we're going to go down there and we're going to showcase a little card game that we're going to be running the Kickstarter for around the same time. A little card game that Jesse's mainly been the designer of and the artist of. It's a cute little sort of family game. But so we're going to be showcasing that cartograph and then also hopefully selling some dice and some of that sort of stuff too. But yeah, it's going to be huge. Really excited.
And a bit of the other stuff as well.
Yeah, I think the PAX guys, they contacted us and like we have obviously like some of the insects and the potions and all that kind of stuff on our Instagram. And they sort of contacted us saying, hey, just make sure you only bring like game related stuff. You know, don't bring your bugs. It's basically what they were saying.
Yeah, okay. So all right, yeah.
We're going to have to like keep some of our stock home, which is fair enough, right? Yeah, it'll be kind of odd to go to PAX and see like a gothic entomology take or something. Yeah. You sort of be like a little out of place.
Yeah. I guess it's not, it's a little different. Like they don't kind of have the artist alley type area like at Supernova or anything like that. Yeah. It is a very different vibe at PAX, I've got to say.
There's
a huge, huge focus obviously on the esports and the gaming and stuff like that, which is really cool. I mean, that draws the massive crowds, but
absolutely.
The tabletop section, I think, traditionally has been a lot of fun, you know, and there's so many games to play and, you know, so many, like, even the tables of, you know, game devs looking for feedback. I really like that as well. So, that sounds huge. And look, I mean, for anyone out there who's ever tried getting a table at PAX, it's not easy.
So no.
Basically, if you wanted to get a table for next year, you probably wanted to book, you know, 6 months ago. It's quite a challenge. I've actually put in a proposal for a panel for PAX this year, which would actually be really cool if it comes about. So it's going to be, you know, Talking Dice and some of the local Melbourne dice makers as well, just doing a panel about, you know, dice making in Australia and getting into the hobby and all of that sort of stuff. So that'll be a lot of fun. So amazing. If anyone's listening from PAX, please approve our panel so that we can come along this year as well. Now, Brandon, I know you've developed a couple of games now. I'm actually really interested in how you kind of come up with a concept or a theme for a game. Like, what kind of inspires you to, you know, to sit down and write some kind of new system?
Games are like, I don't know, it's bizarre where the ideas come from. Like, I think it's one of those phenomenon where I've probably subconsciously absorbed things throughout the day that I've thought, oh, that's cool. Oh, that's cool. And then, and like 90% of the time, it will be literally that thing that Jesse just said before, where I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll be like, oh my God, this idea, it's great. I need to write it down. And so I'll like wake Jesse up and then write it down. And in the morning, I'll either be like, what the hell does this sentence even say? What does this mean? Or I'll be like, oh yeah, that idea, let's turn that into a game. But I think it's a lot of those like little subconscious things where I've seen things. And
so is it normally the theme you come up with first or the game mechanics? I know as a bit of an engineer myself, I often look at a game and go, oh, well, that really frustrates me, but I kind of liked.
Yeah.
I kind of liked how the theme worked out, right?
It's sometimes it's one way or the other, I think. A majority of the time it's the concept, and then I'll try and fit the mechanics to it. But there has been times where I've done the jolt awake at night and I'm thinking of a mechanic instead that I haven't got any sort of theme for yet. But making games as well, it's quite a long process, because I don't think there's no methodology you can really follow to just be like finding out the right mechanism for it. And especially if you're trying to do something innovative, it's kind of, you kind of just have to keep fumbling around and trying random stuff until something is like, oh, actually that kind of works here. And then you just follow where those leads run, I guess. But yeah, a lot of the time it'll just be a concept, and then I'll sit down and stare at my computer for like a good while, just in my Obsidian Vault or something. And I'll just be trying to piece together the mechanics that'll make this work. And I usually just try and focus on a part at a time. So I'll be like, okay, so my concept is like, you know, you're making a map as this cartographer. So what does the map making part of this look like? And I'll basically sit down and try and flesh that part out. And I'll go, okay, what would support this narrative? Probably like, you know, resource management or something like that. That would make it a bit gamified and be interesting and make your decisions more interesting as you play. So I think taking it piecemeal and approaching it like that, that's how I sort of go. And then I'll try and, you know, to make sure everything runs together, playtesting is the most important. Like, there, it's no substitute for just playing your game hundreds of times to figure out what's wrong with it, because there's always something.
And speaking of gaming systems, Wizards of the Coast are, you know, in the process of relaunching their Player's Handbook and Dungeon Master's Guide. And have you been following along with that at all?
No, we haven't. We haven't really played D&D in a long time. And like, I still have, you know, tomes and tomes of D&D volumes from 5e back to AD&D, but you know, I don't think it's something that we'll return to unless our group has a particular penchant to return to, because I just have so many stacks of other interesting games on my shelf that I would rather try out. Yep. You know,
and so what are they, you know, I mean, are we talking established gaming systems or more indie developers or
both? I think definitely both. You know,
we've got both.
Yeah. Yeah, like, we think we're probably going to try and play a Vampire the Masquerade game sometime soon.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's a pretty big one. But then on the contrary, there's a role-playing game called Bluebeard's Bride that I really want to play soon. And that's a pretty indie title. And it's this fascinating concept where every player is playing a different psychological aspect of the same person.
Oh, wow. Okay, that sounds really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, really bizarre, yeah. Right? So I'm like, how can I pass up wanting to play that? That sounds so cool.
Yeah, that sounds really unique, actually. You know, I've really enjoyed those Instagram posts you've been doing of like, oh, here's a system that you should be looking at. Like,
oh, cool. Oh,
you need to keep doing that. I love that, because, you know, I'm not into game design. I'm not particularly on these indie, you know, role-playing sites. Like, I like to know about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Good to shine a light on some of that as well. But
yeah,
speaking of that, let's chat about some of the other accounts you like to follow. Dice Makers, Game Makers.
Wow.
Well, I got a list ready.
Oh, here's one I prepared earlier.
Yeah. You did make a list, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I'm constantly trying to recommend other businesses to other people. So I've always got like a list of businesses I love. I have tackled different realms here of many recommendations.
Bring it on.
So we actually work with a Twitch streamer called Winter's Tales. And they're doing this amazing series at the moment that we're sponsoring, where it's called Castleton, and it's like Bridgerton versus like Hunger Games. Oh, yeah. And she's kind of blended those two ideas, and she has over 150 different content creators on board.
Yeah, they're all players. Like, it's huge.
Yeah, and they're all such good actors, and it can make you cry. So I always recommend that, like, watching that D&D stream,
because
like, we're a part of it, and it's beautiful, and it's actually really good.
Yeah.
For fantasy things in general, not so much a dice maker, but like prop stuff, wizardy vibes, we always recommend Midnight Ritual.
Yeah,
they're the most beautiful people, and they have the coolest stuff. Like, every time I go to their stall, I'm like, how do I buy everything without like going broke? For dice makers, we've been really loving Winter Wormling, which is a Melbourne maker. Yeah, I love their team. I it's what we really aspire for, because one's a dice maker, one's the dice bag maker, one's a 3D printer. And I was like, is a dream team right there. And they're just so lovely and they're really expanding and just doing so well for themselves.
Yeah.
And lastly, D20 Source Co., which is a D&D themed hot sauce company.
Right. Okay. Wow. Right. Yep.
Yeah. I guess nerds that really love hot sauce, and we've been loving their business. They're just so, so cool and just nerdy anything. Nerdify anything, and I'm there for it.
I just opened up their website. I'm terrified of the necromancer. Some awesome recommendations there. And Brandon, how about any game designers that you follow?
Oh, any game designers. Yeah, okay. There's a Sydney group called Story Brewers, and they do some excellent indie role-playing games. And they did their biggest one, I think, is called Good Society, which is like a Bridgerton-esque style role-playing game. And it's got some fascinating ideas in it too. It doesn't use dice for its resolution mechanic, which is...
That's a shame, isn't it?
It is a shame, but it's like, it's interesting too. But yeah, so Story Brewers are really, really great. I really like them as game designers, and 1000 Rats too. Those guys I mentioned earlier that gave us their PAX booth, they make some great games. Yeah.
And they're just the most lovely people ever.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Walking rays of sunshine.
Yeah.
That's always nice too, right?
Yeah.
You hate when people are doomy and gloomy about their, their passion projects and their...
Exactly. Like, why are you doing it?
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly. I think, look, it's in this industry, we're literally about games, right? People play games because it makes them happy, hopefully.
Yeah.
I hate to think that people are playing games because they have to, or because, some generational curse or something like that,
Yeah.
So generally people are playing games because they enjoy it. And, as members of that community, we should really be enjoying it as well, right? Like, it's
yeah, that's right. Absolutely. We did have one time, actually, where we were in a role-playing group, and it seems kind of like rare that there'd be someone playing games that they actually wouldn't be having a fun time doing it. But there was this member of our party, and he was playing, I can't even remember what character he was playing, but every single time we were sitting down at the table, he just looked glum and like disinterested. And like the DM wasn't like DM was good. And I talked to him sort of after maybe five or so sessions. I was like, why are you playing? You seem like you really don't enjoy it. And he was like, I don't think D&D's for me. And I'm like, why are you playing? And he's like, I'm just really worried that you guys will have some cool moment and I won't be there for it. And I'm like, but you're sitting here for like 4 hours every weekend, just like wishing you weren't here. Like, I don't think that's worth it, man.
Well, maybe it is. I mean, I've had some of those moments where you're like, if I'd missed that.
Yeah, true. That is true. Yeah.
No, that's so good. What's the best place for people to reach out to you? Obviously, anyone who's heading along to PAX in October.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Going to see Raven's Ridge live there. It's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, come say hi.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy good. Usually you can contact us on Instagram.
It's the best place.
Yep. Yeah, it's the best place. We're always down for a chat. Just pop in and be like, oi, Ravens. And I'll be like, what do you need?
And then it's sort of also like amongst all the other socials to some degree, like a little bit on Facebook, a little bit on Twitter.
A little bit on Discord.
TikTok.
On TikTok too. But I don't think we chat as much on TikTok. Instagram's typically our
biggest. Yeah, I feel like more people comment on TikTok, but they don't like DM or chat.
Yeah,
it's kind of like they pop into the comments just to say something.
You mentioned you're still interested in doing dice commissions and stuff like that. I saw that you've still got a form on your website.
Yeah.
People can still reach out if they've got a cracking good idea, right?
Absolutely. I'm always down for new ideas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for chatting today. I've had a great time. We've had a lot of laughs. Hopefully we hear from you guys again, probably just in time for PAX or for your new run of Kickstarters. It'd be great to have you back on the program again.
Yeah, we'd love to pop back in and have a chat. It's been awesome chatting. Yeah.
And that's all we've got time for today. So thank you so much for listening to Talking Dice. And And if you're hearing this message, you've listened to the entire episode of Talking Dice, and we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please give us a big thumbs up and leave a review. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/talkingdice if you'd love to help us in the best way possible. And we'll catch you in the next episode of Talking Dice. Goodbye.